Hello, and welcome to Marketing in the Raw. That's the podcast, and I am the host, Adam Helway. It's my goal to expand how you define the practice of marketing and your vision of where it's headed, especially in a digitally connected world. I know you want to be a better marketer. After all, you're listening to this podcast. But how about a more creative marketer? Or, better yet, how about a sexier marketer? Well, do I have a deal for you? Today, I talk with my friend, Courtney Kramer-Smith. She is the co-founder of H2H Companies, where her and her husband, Brian Kramer, turn business leaders into human leaders. She's also formerly held leadership roles as the co-founder and creative director of marketing agency Pure Matter and the global head of marketing at Coactive Training Institute. She's also one of the most creative and funny people that I know. We'll get a preview of her new book. It's titled Be Your Creative Sexy Self: Humorous Stories to Help You Live a Happier Life. We'll also discuss why ego is the creativity killer and how to create the best conditions to solve deeper problems. Are you ready to find your creative, sexy self? Let's do it. Here's Courtney Kramer-Smith. Courtney, my friend, I am so happy to be seeing you. Normally, I would see you out and about some great event, but we aren't having events these days. Those are passé, right?
No events, and we live so close. We could even like have met for a lunch or dinner or something, but who's doing that even?
No, I mean, come on. That's not trendy at all these days. You know, I'm so glad to be talking to you because I've always been an admirer of your humor and your creative streak. And I realized in knowing that I was going to talk with you, I don't know if I've ever really understood, like, I know where your design and creative chops come from. Where did you start in the creative field back in the day?
Well, how far back do you want me to go? When I was four, No. Well, I did always know that I wanted to be in advertising of some sort. I mean, I joke around about when I was little, but for sure, I remember in third grade, like drawing ads, like lines where the copy would go and, you know, drawing whatever the made up product was at that time. And I majored in, let me go back. In high school, like I was continually rewarded unexpectedly for like my artistic ability, although artistry and creativity are sisters, not the same thing. But like outstanding senior artist, and that gave me the confidence to go into a dual major of studying advertising and graphic design in college at Michigan State, which weirdly, I was the first person to do that in the history of Michigan State. I mean, this is, you know, years ago, but anyway, and then when I graduated, you know, just knew I was going to go into graphic design and art direction and creative direction. And so I did that for, about 4 years after college. And then I said, I want to start my own business. So I started my own graphic design firm and had that for 5 years before I met the illustrious BK, Brian Kramer, some of you who may know. And we actually met at an advertising conference in Washington, D.C. So that sort of, as they say, the rest is history when I ended up moving to California. And then Brian and I started Pure Matter, our agency, creative agency that we had for, you know, 20 plus years. That was started in 2002. So it's always been in my DNA, I guess.
It's always been there. Well, I want to touch upon something that you said in just a second, actually. But before that, we have to broach the topic of your book.
Please do.
Yeah. So Be Your Creative Sexy Self: Humorous Stories to Help You Live a Happier Life. Now, I know enough about you to know that you're not only a creative person in the sense of your prose and your writing, but you have a great sense of humor, and it really actually shows through in the book. Like just getting through the table of contents alone, you're like, oh, I see what I'm getting into here. But so why did you feel like sex was the perfect metaphor to pair with teaching people how to sort of tap into their creativity?
Well, I like, it's always sort of titillated me, if you will. Just the fact that people get so embarrassed talking about sex, right? And especially me as a woman, when, you know, when I would ever like joke around about it or whatever, I'm a huge fan of the "that's what she said" joke. I never have, nor do I now, perceive it to be like disrespectful. It is a little juvenile. My humor is definitely like my inner 12-year-old boy. And I don't know. I just always found it very funny to see people squeam, like be squeamish, you know, about it and make it, I love to make people uncomfortable, I guess. Is that bad?
You like some of the cringe moments a little bit, I guess, huh?
I do. Well, and I think too, just like looking at my upbringing, I was raised in a very like Christian religious household. And so sex was never a subject that we would talk about a lot. So I was always very curious about it. And, you know, asking questions about it, or, you know, like definitely not like out there doing it, but certainly curious about it. And I guess the fact that my parents and our family didn't really talk about it made it something I wanted to know about, right? Like any rebellious kid, I was definitely have a rebellious streak, but I'm also super curious about lots of things. And I think you probably noticed that in the book, is it is my journey of curiosity, of being like, I found this out and that made me really curious. So I went over here and I looked at this thing over here, and then that made me curious about this thing over here. And did you know? And I found this out. It's like kind of like who I am, I guess, as a person. So sex to me was like a great metaphor, just because I also am a huge fan of the double entendre. Right. Like, it's just funny. It's just funny.
Well, and you would think that you would think that at face value, it would be a gimmick, and it's not from what I've read so far. So it's not, I love the connections that you're making. And you sort of going back to what you were saying earlier, like many people define creativity as something to do with the arts, right? You were talking about doing art and creativity are sisters. So that a lot of times I find that the same with people, when you talk about them being creative, they're like, you know, they can write beautifully or paint or draw or do music or maybe cooking or whatever. But how do you define creativity?
Creativity is truly just curious problem solving. You know, it's getting really curious about something and thinking, like putting yourself in the conditions of being able to make different connections in your brain in order to make new connections that haven't been made before. That truly is the definition of creativity. Everything that you mentioned is an expression of creativity. It's a way to express your creativity through artistry, through cooking, through dance, through whatever. But you can be creative in like mowing your lawn, you know, like today I'm going to decide to make crop circles instead of making lines, like whatever. It's just like thinking about something in a different way in the effort of solving a problem or a challenge in a new way.
So at the beginning of the book, I thought it was really interesting because you sort of set the stage before anything else with this big pink statement that says ego is the creativity killer. Where does that come from?
Well, it is. First of all, the ego is the thing inside of us that tells us we are all self-important and all-knowing as our own individual human self. And that is simply not true. The ego is put there to protect us, and it serves a purpose, certainly in our lives, in decision-making. But it is the creativity killer, because in order to manifest creativity or put yourself into the state of being creative, you have to be open. You have to be distracted meaning you're not thinking, you're out of your head, and you're in a different place in your body, or certainly somewhere outside of your body, meaning like thought-wise or cognizant-wise. And when you are truly in ego, then it is, like, creativity cannot happen when you're in your ego.
Do you describe creativity, right, as the opposite of ego, I think, even as you were saying it right now. And so you even started to talk about it a little bit now, where in the book you talk about it as being sort of an openness to vulnerability, so do you think that it's that unwillingness to be vulnerable that makes it challenging for people to tap into their creativity?
Vulnerability is it feels like an adjacent word to whatever the thing is, right? Like when you're vulnerable, you're actually opening your heart, and you're coming from a place of true authenticity and sharing courageously sharing what others could perceive as like an issue or an imperfection or whatever. Creativity comes from a different place where you're able to get out of your own way and allow new connections in the brain, right? So it's more like creating the conditions for, right? Like, so you've read the book, you probably remember that the part in there where I got really curious about the suffix ivity. You know, and so I was like, what does that even mean? Like, we know words like productivity and reactivity and like whatever. And I, in doing my research, I learned that in the English language, there are only 92 words that have that suffix, compared to the next closest suffix, which I don't remember what it is, but it's like in the 2000s, right? So it's very special suffix, if you will.
Yeah.
And what it means is, we'll use like creativity. The suffix means every single thing that goes into creating the conditions to make the first half of the word possible. So in we'll use productivity, right? Like to produce. Productivity means every single thing that goes into the ability to allow something to be produced. So the talent, the brain power, the skills, the environment, the tools, the process, the materials, like it's everything fit into that suffix, right? So a lot of dials to pull.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So when you're talking about creativity, it's everything that needs to go into the environment that allows that to happen, which is also equally as complex. So it's the environment that you're in. Are you in a place where you're allowing yourself to get into flow? You know, so which means open to ideas, allowing new neural pathways to connect. There are multiple different places where people can do that: out in nature, in meditation, in the shower, you know, laying or like just sitting in a quiet place, listening to music. There's a lot of different ways that we can allow these different neural pathways to happen, but they have to happen in order for us to be able to create something, new ideas, new thinking, new connections. So it's a fascinating concept.
Well, I love that, because as somebody who's been in the creative field all my life, my background is in design in the creative field, let alone my sort of gravitating towards, you know, marketing and such, which I've been doing for a long time. And that's that creative problem solving, like you were saying, but it's, I've not heard it defined in that way before, which is really interesting. I think to some extent it's, I'm one of the folks that for certain things that creativity comes fairly, you know, easily, and then other things it doesn't. And I think to your point, it's usually due to ego in some shape or form. And so I find that really interesting, the way that you're describing it. How does Courtney get into creative flow? What's an example of how you get in your own creative flow?
Well, I usually get my best ideas in the shower. I got my idea for this, like the it started 10 reasons why creativity is like sex in a presentation, but it, like, the idea came in like lightning, you know. But the conditions in the shower, I talk about this too in the book, which is, a lot of people see the shower as a place where they get their best ideas. And it's a scientific reason, because number one, the shower is a very warm, comfortable place. it's also the noise of the water hitting inside of the shower creates white noise, you know, which allows it creates the conditions for what's called divergent thinking, which is nonlinear thinking. Different neural pathways can connect to each other. It when that happens, those two things, it actually releases dopamine in your brain, which is a chemical that is experienced during times of pleasure, right? The word ecstasy, which is, normally perceived as like a sexual thing, is actually not only applicable to sex. It actually means it's the feeling of euphoria and pure pleasure when dopamine is released in your brain, which is a good thing. And it sort of perpetuates the cycle of, you know, divergent thinking. And it's, in the book, I call it double D's in the shower. It's dopamine and divergent thinking.
She's got a lot of good ones in there, in the sense of like the table of contents is only tip of the iceberg. So we talk about things on a personal level, but do you think that folks sometimes make the too much of the, what do you call it? They go, sure, personally, I can be more creative, but that doesn't apply when it comes to business. There's so many other sort of, you know, barriers. And of course, they start to remove that there's that association with it being this like artistic expression, which is easy to connect with from a personal level. But on a business side, it's even more attributable towards new ideas, innovation, all that, right?
Well, I mean, I'm a business owner, you're a business owner. I'm sure that, you know, we can both agree that there's a lot of challenges to be solved in business.
Yep.
And the same thing applies, you know, it's, you have a situation where there's maybe two employees that aren't getting along and you're trying to figure out how to help move them along. That requires a certain level of creativity and decision-making that is not anything that you can get out of a book, because there's a lot of nuances. There's personalities. There's, they both have their egos coming into this. They both have a point of view. So there's some creative problem solving that could be applied there about like, hey, maybe I'm going to force them to sit in a room and duke it out. That's a creative solution. Maybe I'm going to sit them down and allow them a talking stick so that each of them can't talk over each other and they each get their own turn to talk. Maybe I'm just going to fire them both. You know, like there's different pathways that you could take, and each one of them requires a certain level of creativity, which, you know, again, just means like curious problem solving about what's the best possible way to solve this problem so that I achieve the outcome that I want to achieve.
Yeah. So I want to float this by you. Recently, I discovered a quote attributed to Albert Einstein. What does it say? It says, my notes, I put art instead of smart, which is not the right word. So I was like, what the heck? Albert Einstein did. But
he art on the brain.
Yeah, exactly. So he said, it's not that I'm so smart. It's just that I sit with problems longer. And considering how much is thrown at us each day, the constant juggling of tasks and priorities that we deal with, to me, this was really a quote that spoke about tapping into creativity. What's your thoughts on it?
Totally. We'll use Einstein. I'm going to make a lot of assumptions here and like make up a story about that quote, but it's going to be like, he was committed to solving that problem, you know? And so he sat with it and he wasn't willing to let it go. And so the only way to help solve it to his level of satisfaction was to probably deconstruct it, pull it apart, look at it from every possible angle until he was able to make sense of it. That to me, like, he was applying divergent thinking to that experience.
Yeah, to me, it was a reminder when I first heard it that in most cases when I'm not able to, when I don't feel like I'm solving the problems I want to solve, regardless of where those problems, you know, what they're for, work or personal or whatever, that it's often because there's just too much going on and I'm not allowing myself enough time in the shower. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Really is that it really honestly is that simple. A lot of cases, I think that's probably one of the biggest enemies for most folks being able to solve those problems, to get into that creative problem solving mode, is getting that margin and space that they need in order to do that stuff. It feels counterproductive because you're not, like, you feel like you're not doing anything, but in fact you are doing something. You're, like you're saying, you're allowing for yourself to get into that flow state to tackle something greater than just sort of the day-to-day stuff you've got, you know, from time to time.
Absolutely. We are human beings, not human doings. And I know that, at least the way things were before the pandemic, there was so much noise, so much busyness, so much velocity to our lives. And that is the opposite condition that allows space for innovation and, you know, creative problem solving. I think if there's anything that, you know, we can use the pandemic as a metaphor for the collective brain of our world, which is a gift in so many ways of creating a pause, creating a slowdown, lessening the noise, and giving us an opportunity to sit and reflect and go inward and ponder things in a way that we have not as a collective society. And I think, you know, we can't even conceive of the level of creativity and innovation that's going to come out of this pandemic, assuming there's an end. Please say there's an end. There's an end, right? I think for me, certainly the ability to slow down, you know, that one of my favorite sayings is go slow to go fast. It really helps to support that in, we do need to go slower. Human beings were not meant to go this fast as a society, and allow that space for new connection, like, just period, allow space for new connection. Like, if that could be, maybe I'll print that out and put that on my wall or something. You know, it's a good stake for our lives.
Well, like you were saying, there's conditions for lots of different things. There's conditions to be more creative, conditions, and that was one of those conditions, like you're talking about, right? For us to be more connected, we need a certain number, we need some elements, and one of those is that space, like you said. We can't be connected sort of, you know, trying to hold on to the tail of the tiger all the time, nonstop, playing catch up with everything. We can be super productive, I guess, but not really, you know, not really connected nor probably creative in that state.
Think about, like, in terms of the ego, right? Like, when we are doing stuff and we feel productive, our ego says, high five, good job, you did a lot today, you checked a lot off your list, you're doing a great job, you know?
For sure. Yeah. And also, creativity is, I mean, productivity isn't always problem solving either. It can producing something over and over and over again is not as sexy as creativity, for sure. I mean, the creative problem solving some of those larger, bigger problems. I love, in business, seeing some of the founders that I really respect from a business sense, the ones that I think are sort of bucking trends and doing things their way. I think, you know, one of the folks that you had quoted in your book was Steve Jobs, right? And seeing folks get counted out because other people's perception of what's possible, and these individuals are able to get into this sort of constant flow state, so to speak, and solve these problems and create things, services, or ways to make their businesses more effective and efficient or whatever the case may be, and come out on top. And I always really love seeing, you know, we live in Silicon Valley, and we're almost like surrounded by this in our area, where we've got these folks that are creating apps and tools, and that's what's happening right now in the pandemic. Is it's amazing to hear how quickly, right? What has this been going on for? 6 months or something like that, less forever. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and in seeing like the new business models that have come out, or the ways that people who own restaurants have creatively found ways of making it work. I was listening to you a podcast yesterday, and they were talking about, I forgot, it was like a company called like Only Wings and Things or something like that. They've got like three or four products. And they have no storefront at all. You order it online and they deliver it. And supposedly they've sold some billion odd dollars worth of wings and things. And one of the ways that they're doing this is they've taken advantage of Chili's kitchen infrastructure that hasn't been used. So they go and they take, if I recall correctly, so they're going and they're using these vacant kitchens, and they're cooking and doing all the stuff with these kitchens. So now Chili's has got a piece of this here, right? And they're able to not have these vacant kitchens, potentially even have people employed that would otherwise not be able to work. And then there's this whole new sort of model for the most part. Maybe it's not absolutely new, but they've created something new that is exploding right now, and maybe will continue to live on. Similar with, have you ever heard of, I think I told Brian about this actually, but have you heard of the company Cheetah?
Yes.
So Cheetah, very interesting, right? They had a little bit of a new way of delivering food and stuff to restaurants, the ingredients for foods to restaurants in these nicely refrigerated trucks, so they could turn them into almost like portable warehouses to deliver this stuff. And you do it all from an app. And then suddenly when the pandemic hit, they started initially letting folks come, residents come and order, and then just pull their car up and get a contact list. You know, all the stuff would just be thrown from one of the trucks into the trunk of their vehicle, and they'd be able to speed off because you've already ordered it on the app. You've done the transactional part. And now because restaurants weren't open, they weren't getting any business from that. And they suddenly now they've got a residential pickup and delivery service now, and we actually end up getting a chunk of our food every month now directly from Cheetah. Wow. So
that's great. Ingenuity.
So speaking of ingenuity, you went through a creative journey with this book in the sense that it was in a different form some time ago, and you transformed it into something new. Can you share why and what was the experience like going through that creative process where you had already felt like you birthed something and then you're rebirthing it from its previous form?
It's like its twin was born 4 years later. Yeah. Painful, no. Well, the funny thing about this idea is, like I mentioned, that it started as a presentation as 10 ideas, and then it evolved from a presentation into 21 ideas. And then that evolved into a screenplay that I wrote way back in 2011, 12-ish. And then I tried to make a go of that and it didn't turn out. And so then I was like, well, I really, really believe in this idea. And so in 2015, I started writing this book, and it launched in 2016 in the fall as 21 Reasons Creativity is Like Sex, and self-published on Amazon, only to find out that Amazon, first they blacklisted it because it had the word sex in it. So I spent 3 months going back and forth with Amazon trying to get them just to make it public off the blacklist. And you know, tried to use that to my advantage, but no one could buy it, so it didn't matter.
Oh my gosh.
And then kind of like I didn't write this book to like go out on a speaking tour or like do anything super like shift my life. I actually wrote it just to challenge myself to see if I could write a book. And I had so much fun writing the book. It was like just for my own pure joy of it. So I wasn't too concerned. Like once it finally came off the blacklist, And then it sort of sat there for 4 years. And I realized over the course of it, through our HTH club, met this awesome lady named Liz Kelly. And over the course of her being in our HTH club, she transitioned from being in high tech to her ultimate dream was to be a romance fiction writer. And so in knowing her and like we were helping to coach her and others, she made the transition and became a romance writer and has since won like the Oscar of romance writers. She's like one of the top romance writers on Amazon right now. She has a huge following.
Wow.
And has learned a lot about self-publishing and writing. So she had been encouraging me over the last year to say like, you know, your book is being suppressed. I feel like it, you know, she's like, I've read your book and your book needs to be out there and more available. And I want to help you like relaunch this book. And I thought, okay. So I actually met with her in January.
And January.
Oh, no, remember January?
Oh my gosh.
Last month of the oldie world. So we met and she was coaching me about like how to play the game on Amazon to be able to get seen. And so interestingly, that was such a cool process. Like if any of you out there are wanting to write a book, Liz Kelly should be your book publishing coach. And so she helped me understand like here, like the categories in Amazon are like shopping aisles. And so you need to make sure that you're in as many shopping aisles as possible. And you need to make sure that your book title is the reader payoff, right? Like they need to know what they're getting out of the book title. Mm. And also it, like the, we came up with the book title completely off of the top keywords that people are searching for on Amazon. And it ended up being the reader promise built of keywords, right? So, be your creative. Creative is one of them. Sexy. People are searching for sexy all the time. Sexy. Okay. Sex, not okay.
Yeah.
Huh. On Amazon. And then self, right? People are searching for like self-help books or self-improvement or whatever. And then humorous, stories, happier, and life. Those are all keywords, you know? So it was genius, you know, not on my part, on her part for helping me understand like how to play the Amazon game. And the outcome of it was so much better than I could have done on my own because I didn't understand like how it all worked. And so at the time, up until May of this year, I was serving as the global head of marketing for Coactive Training Institute, which is the world's largest in-person coach training and leadership development company who has since taken their courses online. And I highly recommend for anyone out there looking for leadership development or becoming a coach, they are the best in the world for teaching you how to do that. But they got hit super hard by the pandemic. And so I parted ways with them in May on my own, raised my hand and just said, hey, you guys are getting crushed. I'm happy to go. And so I had some time on my hands over the summer and thought this is the perfect time to redesign it. So I changed the size of it because the old size of the book was 8x8, which doesn't fit on anyone's bookshelf. So redesigned it to 6x9, which is the standard size, did more research about what the right colors were supposed to be on the cover. You know, which my old cover was black, this one's yellow, and then had a new title and relaunched it at the end of July. And, so it's actually not even officially launched. I mean, it's there for sale. But I've been so busy. I haven't had a chance to actually like, you know, enlist people like yourself, Adam, to help share it out and shout from the rooftops that it's actually there. But it was like, what a perfect example of how, first of all, everyone needs a coach because we all have massive blind spots. Like, it's like our creator sat up there and they're like, watch this, hold my beer. This is going to be hilarious, right? Like, I'm going to create human beings so that they're always guaranteed to be in relationship with other people, their ability to see others' blind spots, but not their own.
Well, that's a benefit of a creative partner, let alone a coach, right? Like a coach is one element, but having a great creative partner, which I know in addition to a good husband, an awesome husband. I know Brian is also that with you as well, yeah. But this is another example where that really, really helped. But go ahead. Sorry.
No, totally. I mean, it's just, I'm like in awe of, you know, people like both Brian and I are, you know, I'm a creative coach. I'm a marketing coach and consultant. And, like whenever people come to me with their own challenges, one of my superpowers is just being able to see the way. I can see it. I know exactly the steps that need to be taken in order to get it to where they want it to go. But for whatever reason, can't see it for myself. Like I'm a regular human being that looks at my own life and my own path. And I'm like, what am I going to do? And then someone's like, well, I think you should do this. And I'm like, yes, you're right. I should do that. Thank you for that.
But this goes back to what you said earlier about sort of getting out of that place that you might be stuck at that point. Right. And sometimes it's not about like getting standing side by side and suddenly being able to see your own body standing there, but just having an outside perspective can sometimes jog that stuff free. Right.
Well, yeah. Having a coach is creating a condition of creativity, right? Like it's putting yourself in the environment where you can get out of your own way and create divergent thinking, which is also created by having someone else observe your life and offer up a different perspective so that your way of thinking changes. It's a great example of that.
All right. So, I'm gonna let you go here in just a second, but I have the most important question to ask you. By the way, it's funny. I'm so used to hearing my 4-year-old making noises in the background that as I'm recording and praying that he doesn't do anything, that I heard him in the background. I was like, oh, I'm talking to Courtney right here. That's gonna be immortalized in the interview here. So, but everybody's dealing with that same thing, right? At home. Whatever the sounds are of the home, that is the sounds of the people right now.
Right.
So my last and final question here is, which chapter in creation of the chapter, or which part of the book was the part that, because I get the getting in touch with your inner 12-year-old. I'm as I'm reading it, I'm like shifting back and forth between the adult 44-year-old me and the 12-year-old me as I'm going through it here. What was the chapter or section that made that 12-year-old snicker the most?
I don't know which part made me snicker the most. Maybe it was the so like the way that each chapter is structured is it has like interesting stories and anecdotes from my own life and like curiosities and actual, you know, stories that help to support the chapter point. But there's also like a little nugget of a sex fact in every chapter. And I think the one that made me laugh the most was like the part about the biggest orgy, like the world record for the orgy, world's largest orgy. Which happened in Japan, shocker. And it wasn't like everyone together. It was actually like a 200 plus couples all simultaneously engaging in the act and recorded on DVD. And I was like, wouldn't it be funny if that was sponsored by Kleenex? Like, like what a branding opportunity.
Oh my God. There's the marketer in you coming out there too, huh? Oh, this is a marketing opportunity. Like,
I can attach a promotion to anything. but just like the like envisioning that in my head for, and just asking the question of like why?
You don't have to envision it. Like, the DVD is available. The DVD is available. You don't have to envision it.
I haven't actively gone out to seek it, nor am I sure I would want to buy that, like the ad retargeting trail of that purchase. I can't even imagine. It's just like everything about that experience. It's like, I remember sitting thinking about that for a long time going, why? What is the point? That was so ridiculous. So ridiculous.
Anything to, anything to immortalize yourself with a world record or something, right?
I guess. I mean, if you have to be in a world record, I guess that's up there for some people. I don't know.
On that note, we have reached the climax of this podcast, and I would like to allow you the opportunity to let folks know where they can get your book and learn more about you and, you know, follow your adventures.
Yes. Well, the book is available on Amazon in print and on Kindle. Be Your Creative Sexy Self, Humor Stories to Help You Live a Happier Life. You can just search that up, or my name, Courtney Smith Kramer. Definitely hit me up on Twitter at CS Has Arrived. It's also that on Instagram, and I'm also on Facebook, that I don't really check that often these days, but please do hit me up there if you're there. Definitely Twitter though. And I'd love to hear from you. Definitely, reach out. I will respond. I promise. And, let's get creative. Let's have a conversation.
I love this conversation, and I'm excited for the reimagining of your book and the release of it. And I do think folks should run out and get a copy of it. And I enjoy thoroughly your smarts and your arts with your humor. It's there's I think it comes across here in this conversation, but you're always so humorous in the way that you're looking at things online. I always get a good laugh out of it. So I appreciate you.
Thanks, Adam. I really appreciate you inviting me to be on your amazing podcast.
Thank you so much. And I will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Adam.
I love that you finished the episode. I super appreciate that you spent your time with us. You could have been in so many other places. Maybe you were avoiding those other places, and that's why you spent time with us. At any rate, I hope the time was well spent. And if you could do one thing for us, it would be incredible if you could subscribe to the podcast. And if you've already done that, first, I'd love to give you a hug when I see you next. And second, if you would then instead rate and review the podcast, it helps us get discovered. It helps others that are interested in the topics find us. And all the way around, it is super appreciated. If you'd like to connect with us for any reason, you'd like to connect with me directly and ask me some questions about marketing, or maybe suggest a topic for an episode that we should be talking about, go ahead and email me at adam@secretsushi.com, or just generally check us out at secretsushi.com to see what we're up to. All right, take care.